As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that wants its mommy, it's SifPop. Welcome to SifPop Weekly, streaming live most Saturday mornings, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks!
Patrons get those perks! I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he's an overrated co-host. Sorry, celebrated co-host. Couldn't read my own handwriting. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm arresting you for the murder.
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. He's no longer merely a suspect. He's also a potential victim. It's Jonathan Watkins.
Hello.
That could be for either movie.
You guys are jumping to conclusions too quickly.
It's true.
You need to keep that note in your notepad.
I have a tendency to do that. Yeah. Good to have you back, Jonathan. How have things been? It's been a hot minute since you've been on the show.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to you a lot since then, but
well, yes, we work together, so that is common.
So it's been good. It's been good. Things are going good. Daughter just started a brand new school, and we're getting used to that, and it's been fun. So.
Yeah.
Trying to get the swing of things, which we usually don't until the school year is about to end, because that's how it works. But we're getting there.
It is that time of year. School has started back up, and it's definitely a whole new rhythm of life once school starts up. I just know it's interesting because we had a guest that didn't work out this week, and I was kind of at the last second trying to figure out, you know, who to have on, and then all of a sudden you popped up in our like work chat, and we're like. Man, I just saw See How They Run. And then earlier that week, you're like, I just saw Bob Barry. And I was like, well, he's already seen both the movies. Why don't you come on and talk about them? Yeah,
that worked out.
It worked out nice.
And these are both going to be fun to talk about for various reasons.
I'm excited to talk about Barbarian. I'm excited to talk about See How They Run. We'll also do a best ever challenge today on best ever Sam Rockwell. So the best movies that Sam Rockwell has been in. And then, of course, we'll do some buried treasure at the end. Before we get into the reviews, I do want to quickly mention that the next couple weeks may be a little bit different. I won myself a contest. So, not even kidding. Like 10,000 entrants, and somehow I won the grand
prize. That's crazy. But, I'm just glad you're calling it the right thing now. I had to help you with that.
But. That's true. I won a full trip, travel, lodging, all. To the Fantastic Fest in Austin does Alamo Drafthouse put it on? Is it like their baby?
I think so. I think they started it with, it was Ain't It Cool News at the time. They're not involved anymore, but I mean, I think it was through Alamo Drafthouse. I believe that's right.
So I will be headed to Austin. One of the often guests of SifPop, Ian Whittington, will be going with me as my plus one. And for the next probably 2 weeks, we'll see how it goes. We will be doing reviews of the movies we see at Fantastic Fest and talking about the experience and those kind of things. So we'll be doing some Fantastic Fest coverage. Jonathan is correct. For a while, I was calling it Fantasy Fest.
That's a whole different thing.
That is a whole different festival that I did not win a contest to, and that I would probably not have permission to attend. So Fantastic Fest is what we will be at. So I wanted to give you a heads up on that. That the next couple of weeks we will be doing that. I think other than that, I think we're ready to talk about these movies. Let's kick it off and talk a little bit about Barbarian.
Yeah.
This is 476 Barbary, right?
Yeah, I'm renting this place.
No, I booked it a month ago.
Are you sure you have the right place?
Yeah. What am I supposed to do?
Why don't you come inside? And we'll call these idiots. Why don't you just crash here?
Oh, no.
I don't know if you got a great look at this neighborhood, but I don't think you should be out there by yourself. It's dry and there's a lock on the door.
By the way, I'm Keith.
Tess.
In town for a job interview, a young woman arrives at her Airbnb late at night only to find that it's been mistakenly double booked and a strange man is already staying there. Against her better judgment, she decides to stay the night anyway, but soon discovers there's much more to be afraid of in the house than the other house guest. Barbarian is kind of, if I'm reading my Twitter correctly, kind of taking horror fans by storm. They are really buzzing about this movie. In fact, I think, Andrew, last week you were like, man, everybody's talking about Barbarian. We should do Barbarian on the show. So we have. I guess let's not get too much into it yet. Let's just do the like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay. Jonathan, kick us off.
I've literally thought about this, I've thought about this a lot today because I don't know... what to say. It's kind of a weird movie. I don't know how much I like it, but I would absolutely recommend it to just about everybody for the experience alone. So
okay.
I'm on the lower end of like, because it does go into some to areas that I'm not, that's not my kind of horror, but but the way, I guess I'm gonna say like it.
All right, low side of liked it for Jonathan. And I will say it looks likely that we will be doing Sif spoils on both of these movies for separate reasons. So I'll go ahead and give you a heads up on that. Andrew, like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I'm actually kind of in the same boat as John, where I'll say that there are parts of this movie that I absolutely love. I think there are parts of this movie that are very well done. And then there are other parts of this movie I just don't care for. So I'm going to go with high side of okay. So really close to John, but maybe a little less.
Side of okay. I'm firmly in disliked it. I don't hate this movie, and I think I understand why it's appealing to people and kind of what they're seeing in it. But I genuinely didn't have a great experience. I guess I'll wait since I liked it the least. Jonathan, sounds like you liked it the most. Why don't you kick us off? What are some of your overall thoughts?
So I thought it was interesting. First off, Zach Cregger directed this. I'm not familiar with The Whitest Boys You Know. I think that's the name of the show. But I just thought it was interesting when I found out he comes from like a comedy troupe background. That's kind of a Jordan Peele thing, right? Like that's where, that's the same type of background Jordan Peele has. And then Jordan Peele goes on to make horror movies because he's a fan. And then now Zach Cregger is getting to make some. Although I heard a really interesting interview with him this week where he was talking about writing this. And initially he just wrote it. He wrote basically the first 30 minutes and then it just, and where there is kind of an ending point, I guess. And he was like, well, I guess I just wrote a short film that nobody's ever going to see. But then he just kept kicking it in his head and he came up with this other stuff. So I think that's what I like about it. It's one of those things where I don't know how much I like the story, but I love the way the story is told. There are smash cuts in this movie that are brilliant. There are just things like that where the story gets to a point, you don't know where it's going, and then all of a sudden this crazy stuff happens, and then it smash cuts to like middle of the day in Los Angeles, and Justin Long is like singing Ticky Ticky Tacky or whatever that song is by Donovan or whatever. But it's a wild movie. It does get into, there is a subgenre of horror, because it starts off, you think it's just going to be like a typical home invasion. I think the casting is very purposeful too. I think Bill Skarsgård's the perfect person to put in that role because you know, you just, he's got that look, A, that you just don't know what, you don't know what it, what he's actually thinking behind those eyes, but also the Pennywise, obviously.
They cast Pennywise for, yeah. I mean.
and he's, and I love the stuff with them at the beginning too. I think that's really brilliant where he's really, he seems to be trying to make her comfortable, but he's doing it in a way that also is very creepy. Mm-hmm. And you don't know if that's just because he's uncomfortable or he does, you know, he's socially awkward or something, or he's actually, you know, there's a reason why he's there and he's, you know, going to do something to her. So you never, you don't, you just don't know what's going to happen. And then when stuff starts happening, it's definitely not what you think's going to happen. And then it just gets crazier from there.
Right.
But I don't know. I just think this movie's really interesting. I like how Craiger plays with structure, in this film. I think that's my favorite part of it. So it has more to do with the technical stuff and the writing than it does the actual, actions and stuff that take place. Everybody in this movie is good, by the way. I think everybody gives a good performance and stuff, but it's just, like I said, it gets into some subgenres of horror that I'm just not a huge fan of. But I still respect the journey, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Andrew, what are some thoughts from you?
John's right there. Tonally, it feels kind of like two different movies, like the first half and the second half. I really like first half. The second half, not so much, because I think that the chemistry and the conversation piece between Bill Skarsgård and Georgina
Campbell.
Okay, yeah, between Bill and Georgina is great. It's uncomfortable. It's a great, you know, shining a spotlight on how women can feel, you know, exposed and vulnerable, you know, around a guy. And, you know, it even kind of, you know, tries to commentate on, you know, how a guy can, who can sympathize with that feeling. And so he tries to, you know, do everything in his power to try and, you know, make somebody comfortable. But at the same time, that itself comes off as creepy, like you said. That whole beginning was just astounding. The camera work and the cinematography and the lighting in this movie, stellar, absolutely stellar. I just don't like where the movie goes from there, really.
Yeah, it sounds like the three of us all had very similar experiences, just came down with a different level of the enjoyment of the experience, kind of stair-stepped our enjoyment. I think the first part is the best part. This is a movie of thirds for me, more than halves. I feel like there's definitely three acts in this movie, which is common with a three act structure, although this is unlike any three act structure I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Which is probably what's partially attractive about this movie.
Absolutely.
Is that it's doing something you're not used to movies doing. And I totally get that. Unfortunately for me, this is the big swing that is the strikeout. You know, this is the, like, trying to do something interesting, trying to do something new, but it's just a miss. And in fact, for me, kind of ruins the experience in a lot of ways. Because I, like you, Andrew, was really enjoying that first part, especially the dynamic, the gender dynamic, the conundrum dynamic, what would you do? You know, as a dude, like, I'm thinking, what if I was the guy who was already there? What would I do? You know, I was thinking, you know, what would it be like to be, you know, a woman and feel vulnerable? And what would I do in that situation? And I think the movie handles all of those questions in really interesting and authentic ways, which is just why the big swing they take after that for me just kind of undermines everything, because all of a sudden, we're in a completely different movie. It really is, for me at least, a completely different movie. Now, the plot isn't completely different. The plot makes sense from beginning to end. I totally understand what's happening. It's just the tone changes so much, the format even feels like
it introduced. Well, the Justin Long introduction's interesting, but I will say this, second half, there are things I like about the second half. I think there's some genuine humor in the second half. I love the scene with the tape measure. I think everything about that tape measure is hilarious.
So funny.
Yeah.
So, and I don't want to really get into why it's funny, because I don't want to explain where he is, but I just love that scene. But also the stuff that just... Oh, and then there's a shot of a character diving that is just one of the funniest shots I've ever seen in my life. I don't know if that was supposed to... I think it's supposed to be funny. I think it is, because I don't know how it couldn't be.
This is the thing, because nothing in that... I shouldn't say nothing. So very little in that first third... is supposed to be laugh out loud.
Correct.
Funny.
But yeah. there's awkward me cute stuff, but yeah, it's nothing like that.
So much in the second two thirds that is supposed to be laugh out loud funny.
And there's stuff going on with the Justin Long character that is interesting, and I like some of the dynamics that they present, especially when he ends up meeting some of the other characters and some of his actions. But at the same time, that character does feel like he's in a completely different movie. And I had a hard time. I know some people aren't having that. That's where I had a hard time. Like, it did take me out a little bit at times.
Mm-hmm. Have either of you, it's also a Justin Long movie. Have either of you seen Kevin Smith's movie Tusk?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-mm. That reminded me a lot, or this movie reminded me a lot of Tusk, because the first third is... really edge of your seat, you know, white knuckling the armrest. But then the third act, like when Johnny Depp gets introduced and stuff, it's so ridiculous.
That's what I've heard.
And that's kind of how I feel about this one. I do like, and I don't know if this is what you were talking about, Aaron, but I do like, and I hope this isn't too spoilerish, which you said earlier we are going to do a spoiler cast on, but
I mean, if we work our way around it, we won't necessarily have to, but we'll see. We'll see how we feel.
Well, maybe it's because I was talking to Aaron before we started recording. There was stuff going on in my theater. I had to go to the restroom, so I missed out on some stuff. But what I think I gathered from this movie is it's the reversal of that gender vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that doesn't give too much away, but it was an interesting take on that, how the movie starts off. I'll just say there's also a wine bottle scene with Bill Skarsgård talking about bottle wine, and it's so like, it makes sense and it's cute. It's probably my favorite dialogue in the entire movie. But there is definitely the feeling that Tess, who is the main girl, and Keith, who's Bill Skarsgård, that even though he's nervous and fumbling, you still get a sense of who the person in danger potentially is.
Yeah.
And I love how there's a reversal of that kind of mentality later on in the movie.
Maybe we will need to do a SIF spoil, because I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Well, and but, I was going to... Okay. I mean, are you talking about... Like, that scene is interesting to me, because I guess we could say he makes her tea at one point. And then he realizes an error he might have made. And then he kind of over-explains everything to the point where it's like, now well, I really think you did something to that tea. Like,
yeah.
You know? It's like... there's stuff
but I
like
love that.
That
dialogue so much.
Yeah, it's great. No,
over explaining to where it ends up being creepy, even though he's trying so hard.
I'm excited to see what Zach Cregger has next. I'm glad this is getting good word of mouth. I'm glad people are going to go watch this movie, because I'm really curious to see him do something else.
It's fresh and unique. It's an interesting take. It may not, you know, land perfectly, but he's going for it. And Aaron, you called this the third out strike, you know, or I mean the third pitch strike.
A big swing strike or whatever.
I'm not a baseball guy. if I'm going to use any analogy, I would say that this is a walk-off, you know,
through
four balls. I mean, it's nothing to write home about. You're heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know?
And Aaron,
I don't know.
You not
a walk
being a horror
very
movie
passive,
person.
But yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Well, so in this movie, I think this movie's, because it
this
does so many good things.
Passive. This movie is the opposite of passive.
All right, fine. Yeah.
it has a lot of interesting things to say, though. I think there's stuff in there about motherhood that's really interesting. I think there's stuff in there, obviously, about, like, you know, the Me Too movement, things along those lines. I mean, the stuff we've been talking about with the way the two characters interact for the first 30 minutes or whatever is, I don't know, I've just never seen stuff like that. I also watch a lot of horror movies, and a lot of them are the same, right? A lot of them, like that movie that came out a couple weeks ago, The Invitation, like, that's just, like, let's do this and, you know, let's go from point A to point B to point C. We're just going to knock out the hits and then, you know, hopefully people will feel like they've had a good time. I'm so tired of watching that movie. So when, and I'm so tired of watching just the same superhero movie over and over, right? And I'm tired of watching like these IP things. And so when something like this comes out, it's not IP related. It's a horror movie that's taking chances. I probably am going to give it a little bit of a leg up more than I would. And also I will say, I saw this with a packed theater. Well, about two thirds, but that was fun. If I had just watched this at home by myself in like a month, I don't know that I would say what I'm saying now. And yeah. But I do think that's fair. I mean, I think sometimes the theatrical aspect can be a part of the experience that's positive. But and if this keeps getting good word, like word of mouth, it's getting. I think it got like a C cinema score though, and that's usually not great. But it'll be interesting to see what it does this weekend because you know, there's not a whole lot else that like really came out to chat to go up against it. I wouldn't say, but I don't know. We'll see.
I'd like to kind of jump off your the conversation about originality, which I think is a good one to have with this movie, because as I already mentioned, you're right. Some of the structural choices this movie makes are different. They are big swings, haven't seen that before kind of stuff. One of the problems I had with the movie, though, is when you get down to the details, it's actually not all that different. It's actually a lot of the same tropes, you know, whether it be...
Yeah, but they're done... I don't know. They're just... It's different. Like, the way they're done. It's like they're like acknowledging...
The, different, but
they're
the
acknowledging
the same.
Tropes.
Yeah.
It's not a parody or anything. I don't want people to think that, because it's definitely
kinda
not...
Kind of borders sometimes.
Yeah, but I...
Not the first third.
Not at all.
Get Out has comedy in it. I mean, it's not like horror movies. I mean, Scream has comedy in it. I mean, horror movies have comedy. That's not that weird. So I think it's supposed to be taken pretty seriously because what is going on is awful. Like what has happened to a specific character and why they are where they are at that point. And why they're doing what they're doing to these other characters. This sounds so stupid the way we're telling we're having to walk around everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, because we do go back to the past and we see some things that happened in the past. And, you know, so I don't know. There's some like horrific stuff in this, obviously. But I don't know. I don't get the parody aspect of it that you're saying it gets close to.
I think that I guess maybe if we do the sip spoil, I can talk about some details. I think the last act specifically, not necessarily the second part, but the final third is horror cliche, horror trope, almost to the edge of parody. But maybe that's just how it hit me. But I know some of the 100%. Some of the decisions that are made are definitely tropey.
I'm not really disagreeing with anything you're saying. I think it's just the terms. I just don't know that I would call that parody. Sure. I think it leans
hard. Overall, I'm saying bordering. Like
I think it's purposefully leaning hard into some cliches. And I think it's, I think a lot of that's on purpose. I think it's not as good as Malignant because I really dug Malignant for a lot of reasons. Like I would say I love that if we were talking about that, but it reminded me of that kind of approach. Malignant digs really hard into tropes. It even to the point where it has purposeful bad acting. This one doesn't quite go that far, but I don't know. That was kind of the movie I thought of when I was watching it, even though they're not similar at all as far as like story and stuff like that go. But they're both, you know, they're both horror movies that do that take these like genre conventions, and I feel like they do some interesting things with them. This one doesn't do it as well as Malignant, but I think that's still the kind of the thing. And I would take 20 of these over one in, I mean, any like more invitations or, name whatever generic horror movie that's come out in the last like 10 months. I don't think this is Jordan Peele level by any means. I don't know. It's interesting enough to where I would at least horror fans, I would hate for you to skip it just because you think it's, you know, going to be the same old thing.
I'd be very surprised if a horror fan skipped this. It seems like it's getting a lot of buzz in the community. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do tend to look at word of mouth on some of these, at least if I go see them in the theater, because they just, you know, it's just a lot of, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Never mind. But yeah, I would hate for someone to miss this just because they, you know, are concerned about that aspect of it, I guess.
I think I see the Malignant comparison. I think that's a fair one to bring up. The movie that it reminded me of that came out last fall, I think, maybe this spring, sorry. I can't remember exactly. Do you remember the movie Fresh? I think we talked about it on this
show.
Yeah,
that came out earlier this year, I think. It was on Hulu. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminded me of... I think Fresh is a better version of this movie for me.
Yeah,
it
feels Fresh is a lot better.
Feels a lot more consistent. It deals with the same kind of subject matter in, I think, a more consistent, nuanced way. And the metaphor works better for me overall.
You used the word consistent. I like that because, yeah, there's the tonal changes are so abrupt and shocking that it's, I mean, if the movie did a better job of transitioning or making it clear at the beginning that that's what they were going to go for down the line, like just an Easter egg. But the way John was describing how he saw the interview with Zach Kreger saying that this was initially just going to be a short film. If the short film is that first third, then yeah, I'm pretty sure I totally get that. And then he just added on stuff afterwards. But when he added stuff on, it feels like a different movie almost.
I'm glad you mentioned the technical stuff there earlier, Andrew, because I do want to go back to the lighting. I think the lighting in this movie is
so good.
Exceptional. When she walks out the next morning and you see that neighborhood, that is amazing. Everything about now, there are some, like, if we were sending this movie, we would send the hell out of that scene because it makes absolutely no sense. There's a Airbnb there. That makes no sense to me, at least. Maybe that is common. I don't know. But it's just stuff like that. And then like in parts of the way they light the house and the basement. And yeah, that's pretty exceptional stuff, too.
Yeah, the consistency is a big thing. The final thing I would mention with that, and I think this is going to be my one last thing, is there's such a nuance in like that wine conversation, right? I really enjoy. And when I say nuance, I don't just mean nuance of topic. I also mean nuance of character. Like that Skarsgård character feels like, could be a decent dude, could be a terrible dude, like you know, what is it, you know, and you're really thinking about it, and there's a real nuance there compared to the Justin Long character, which is zero nuance. There is no
I think at the beginning you're not really sure. You find out pretty quickly what kind of person he is.
When he starts talking to his friend and stuff, you're like, oh, okay.
When that happened, I was like, did we even need this? Was there anybody in the theater that was like, no, I bet this is a good guy? Like, the movie is never, I thought at least. Maybe that was just my perspective.
I will say, when he answers that phone and what he says, my friend that I went to the movie with is a gay man. And he was like, I just heard him go, ugh. Like, I mean, it was, you know, and I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all.
Well,
I don't think that was
like, there's nothing about this character that I was ever going, I wonder if he's actually a good dude. You know,
like, that thought, like, I was holding off judgment until more facts were given to me, but I wasn't like, nah, he's a good dude. You got to prove to me that he's not. It was more along the lines of, it doesn't sound too good.
That's that smash cut. That's that the beginning of the scene is where all this happens, and you're already you're almost kind of like in shock because you're like, what is going on right now? It's like, who are these people? Why do I care? And then I will say this though, the movie also, what I like about it is it doesn't treat the audience like it's dumb. There's a scene that goes back in the past and it doesn't say like 5 years later or 5 years ago, you know, it says nothing, but you figure it out on your own because you can watch visuals and realize, okay, this is like 1980 or something.
And then the radio comes on and
Yeah.
It was a very smart and, you know, clever way of doing that flashback.
But I think that has a lot to do with that scene with Justin Long, though. I think a lot of it is just you being so, like, out of sorts because of the way the movie's telling its story. I think you really don't know what to think for a while. And I think that serves his character kind of well because it does make him a little more dynamic, I guess, just because of the way he's placed into the film. But yeah, that scene on the phone and stuff, and that bar scene—we didn't need that. That seemed a little excessive, and didn't seem. Yeah. I mean, because I think before that, we're already pretty sure we know what happened, you know. Yeah. But
do you guys have one final thing you want to mention? Either of you have any more points to get out there?
It's, I guess, it's the quickest post-credit scene in the history of movies.
I didn't understand that.
I didn't either.
I'm even trying to remember what it was. Why?
Yeah.
Did we need? I mean, it literally progresses it like, nothing. It's just
it. Oh, I know what you're talking about now. Yeah, no, it doesn't.
No, yeah, it's anyways. Like a movie ends, directed and written by, and then it goes back to the movie. Like it, yeah. within a second or two, you're like, oh, wait.
And it's just like somebody accidentally left the camera on. Like, there's nothing yeah. there. It's just, yeah, it was a weird one for me. But
I also will say, I mean, and not to, I still, once again, don't want to get too much into spoilers, but I will say, I do find sympathetic monsters interesting. And that's kind of part of what you have going on here. Like I said, the movie does a lot of, there's some interesting things, I think, about motherhood and stuff like that in this. And I think that, I thought that was interesting. But I can't really think of anything else that wouldn't be spoilery. So.
Man, I missed a lot of critical information in this movie when I went to the bathroom.
I don't think so. I just think I'm just beating around the bush, so I think it's harder for me to make sense. But
if you guys don't mind, just a really quick possible Sif spoil for this one.
Yeah, we'll do it.
We'll answer your
questions.
Explained.
Yeah, we'll okay. answer some questions.
Absolutely.
If we have answers.
Yeah,
I do
that's
believe
true.
There are questions this yeah. movie gives us that we won't have yeah. answers for. But
okay.
But yeah. but yes, we will get there. Well, there you go. That is Barbarian, which, by the way, called Barbarian not just for the nature of the film, but also because the street it takes place on is Barbary Street. And so they are barbarians, which I just figured out today.
That is one of the things. He was asked that question, and he basically said the movie needed a title. That's really all he would give as an answer. And that's part of it at least. But I wondered if
they named it Barbarian and then yeah. named the street Barbary Street. so which is very possible. It could have gone either way. All right. So there you go. Recommend from Jonathan. Andrew, would you say recommend, not recommend?
There's enough interesting and good here, I would recommend it.
Yeah,
you know what's
I'm not gonna say that you're gonna like it, but I don't think you'll be disappointed. You saw
there's
it.
there's not a ton of stuff at the theater. I mean, you can go see Top Gun, I guess, for the eighth time, or just go check yeah. out this hour. Like, what is it? Like 90 minutes? Maybe it's not very long.
Hour 40. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah both so, the movies this week were in that hour 30, hour 40 yeah. range, which mm-hmm. is really nice. Yeah, strangely enough, I'm gonna absolutely recommend it to horror fans.
Yeah.
And I guess I would say the only people I don't recommend it to are the people who listen to this or watch this that just know you're in line with me on horror movies. Like, if you're dead in line with me usually on horror movies, then you may not have a great experience with this one. But you know what? You never know. So that's, yeah. There's just
yeah,
enough
I will
interesting.
Say,
so.
I was really excited. I was glad Aaron went and saw it because I really wanted to know what he thought. I'm not shocked by what you thought. I think I made a joke that I was, but I'm not like super surprised. But I was just curious. This was one... Mm-hmm. Like, where I didn't know where you'd land. Because there are yeah. horror movies, obviously, you like,
Well, I mentioned Fresh. Fresh is yeah. a pretty, gruesome, gory concept.
Midsummer, I think, was one you liked
Midsummer
more than
I
me.
Enjoyed. Yeah. yeah. Well, enjoyed is a weird word to use.
I know what you're saying. I was just about to say. Appreciated.
Hey, if Florence Pugh was in Barbarian, you might have liked it more. You never know.
Florence Pugh can almost make anything good. Yeah. She's incredible.
But Georgina Campbell, by the way, is great.
She's
great. I had not seen a lot of her stuff before this, but she's really good in this. I like her a lot.
I'm going to keep an eye out for her for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, let's move on to see how they run.
Fraser. How much longer do you intend to hold us all hostage?
Or is that the idea? Gather all the suspects and interrogate each of us in turn until the mystery's solved.
Marvin Cochranaris, overrated playwright.
Celebrated, playwright.
Oh, I'm so sorry, sir. I can't read my own handwriting.
There was an incident.
I'll kill you.
It's as good as a confession.
Let's not jump to conclusions, Constable.
In the West End of 1950s London, plans for a movie version of a smash hit play come to an abrupt halt after a pivotal member of the crew is murdered. When world-weary Inspector Stoppard and eager rookie Constable Stalker take on the case, the two find themselves thrown into a puzzling whodunit within the glamorously sordid theater underground, investigating the mysterious homicide at their own peril. Long live the return of murder mysteries.
Oh my god.
is another murder mystery with a decent cast. You've got Sam Rockwell and Saoirse Ronan playing our lead detectives, and then Adrien Brody is in here. Many other people whose faces you may recognize.
David Oyelowo.
Yes.
I'm glad you said that. I have no idea how to pronounce that.
So let's talk about it. Andrew, why don't you kick us off? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I liked it. I had a lot of fun with this movie. I liked it.
All right. Nice, solid liked it. Jonathan, what about you?
Oh, I always hate when people say this, but I really feel like this movie was made for me. I loved everything about this movie. I came out of it, I think I put on our work Slack, but this movie is delightful. And that's mm-hmm. really what it is. I mean, it's not perfect by any means, but it's super fun. Super fun.
It is one bad Sam Rockwell accent away from being a perfect movie. I loved this movie.
I liked
as well.
His accent.
What accent was it?
Did Ian go see this, by the way?
No, I don't think he did. I would love to hear because I was just like, that is not a British accent. I don't know what he's doing, but.
But it was, I don't know, it worked. I thought it worked.
Oh, I'm just kidding.
I know.
I will say I'm on the low side.
He was closer to someone like Poirot.
I am on the low side of loved it. I did debate going high side of liked it, low side of loved it, but I think I really enjoyed this enough to crack over into the loved it category.
Yeah, it's so. Like an A minus. You know, that's right there. In
feels
the
about right.
Low
end
of loved it.
You get to kick us off again with some general thoughts.
So I know I saw a trailer for this, and I don't know if they just didn't mention it in the trailer. I had no idea what this centered around. I had no idea. This centers around a production of The Mousetrap, which I believe, with the exception of like COVID era, this is the longest running. It's still running in
the
UK. It was out for a while because of COVID, but then it's back now from what I read. And it's been running since, the early 50s? Because I think this is based around the 100th mm-hmm. show.
Yeah.
And it's in 1953, I think. So I guess 52 or 53 is when it premiered. And I've never seen the play performed, obviously, in the UK. I have seen a production of it here. I've read the short story several times, Three Blind Mice. I'm a huge Agatha Christie fan. So just centering this movie around her work was more than enough to interest me. And then on top of that, you have these really fun performances by Sam Rockwell and Saoirse Ronan. Saoirse Ronan is so good in this movie, by the way.
She's the best part.
Oh, my God.
Stellar.
But they're back and forth. Just the dialogue in this movie is excellent. I know I missed stuff because I was laughing, you know, so much at times, but they just don't make movies like this anymore, right? It's like, it's just this quaint little cozy mystery. And, they can be really fun when you get this kind of cast and, this kind of like energy and this kind of writing involved. And, I had a blast. Biggest surprise of the year, probably.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I will go next. But before I do, I was just looking at some of the stats for the Mousetrap's mm-hmm. run. 70 years. Opened in 1952. It has been running 70 years. 28,000 plus performances.
God.
28,000 performances.
That'd be crazy if there was like a kid that was in it in 1952 and it's like still doing it. That'd be insane.
Yeah. 10 million plus tickets sold.
Wow.
Over those 70 years.
That is so cool.
If I go to the UK, I told my wife already, whenever we make that England trip, I was like, I'm watching The Mousetrap. We're making that happen. Just to be a part of that history.
There is one original cast member that is still in every show.
Nice. I thought maybe that was that happened. So,
but it is a person who has passed away, and so they are now a prop in the show. That's right.
I heard about this. Wasn't there a skull? Didn't they donate their skull?
Oh my God! Are you being serious?
No. I'm thinking about a different guy. I'm sorry. No, there was a guy who donated his skull to be like cleaned and stuff. And now he is the official Hamlet skull.
He is.
But it's a totally different guy than what we're talking about
correct.
Here.
Correct. His pre-recorded voice is still heard
so you're not joking.
Newscaster.
Okay. I thought you were joking there for a second. Like you were making, they propped a corpse.
No. But he still performs.
That's interesting.
In the show every performance. The clock above the fireplace is the same clock as 1952.
Nice.
Has not been replaced. What an interesting thing. Over 460 actors have appeared in the play.
Which, to kind of go tangentially off of that, back to the movie, Were Richard Attenborough and Sheila Sim like ever like the actual cast members?
I thought about that, and I didn't look it up before we started recording, but I was thinking about that. Because I love, that's the other thing about this. I like when movies have a fictional story, but they put real people in it. You know, like, so you do have like Richard Attenborough is a character in this movie. Agatha Christie is a character in this. You know, it's like, that's Sheila interesting Sim, to me.
And what was it? John Moore, who was an actual producer and stuff.
Yeah, I, as far as I know, all the play people should be like actual
real people.
I guess. I mean, some of them I hadn't heard of, but
it's funny because like they said Richard Attenborough. I'm like, oh yeah, that's the old guy from Jurassic Park. And then they show, but then they show this incredibly tall, slender, handsome man. I'm like, that doesn't look like the Richard Attenborough I know.
I like that actor too. I can't remember his name, but he was in the Kingsman.
Harris
he
Dickinson.
Played Ray Fiennes' son in that Kingsman prequel.
So I'll go next with some general thoughts about why I like this movie so much. You mentioned Saoirse Ronan. She is a huge part of it. She is just so likable, so interesting. You know, has quickly become one of my favorite actors working. I just think she does incredible work. I also think this movie handles its meta-ness in a really careful and well done way. It never feels too wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It saves its biggest wink, wink, nudge, nudge for the end of the movie. And that works. I like that, you know, because the play itself also saves its biggest wink, wink, nudge, nudge for the end of the movie. So, or the end of the play. So it makes sense. I also think it does a few things that it kind of gives you some information, and we can talk some more about this when we do the SIP spoil, that is, it's one of those things where jokes turn into, like, great plot, which I'm not going to say any more than that here, but there are a couple instances where you laugh at something because it's funny, and then later on you go, oh, that thing I laughed at was actually important, you know? Like, So yeah, I really appreciated how this movie did that. I really enjoyed that quite a bit. Andrew, what are some of your general thoughts?
I'm just going to get my two negatives out of the way, just because you guys have been so perfect and you've mentioned everything I want to mention about this movie so far. My big negative is I don't like that there is narration in this movie. I could have done without that. I know I'm going to probably be the minority on that, but
I mean, it's kind of a staple of the play itself, and like, it's just, you know,
is it? See, I don't know anything about The Mousetrap, so
yeah.
So if it is, then I'll give points back to it for being, you know, clever that way. And not only do I not like Sam Rockwell's accent, I don't like his performance. I don't like his character because he became so uninteresting, and I was so focused on Saoirse Ronan and loving her that I didn't care about him much at all. And I think he's supposed to be the main guy in this movie, but is he? Okay, is he? Is he?
I don't know.
Is Saoirse Ronan the number one?
I think she's really kind of more the main character. He feels just kind of like a straight man to her, which I think they just play off each other really well. I mean, I can see that. I liked him. I just think I don't think it's possible for me not to like Sam Rockwell. So that could be a me thing.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying.
Is there a murder? You don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry, had to do it.
We'll talk about that later, Aaron. We'll talk about it later.
Gonk says, is it at all similar to Knives Out? In that it's a murder mystery, sure, but not really. They're very different movies.
And it's not. And I don't. When I say Agatha Christie revolves around her, it's nothing like the Kenneth Branagh movie. I mean, it's nothing like Agatha Christie movies. It's a whole different type of... If you've ever seen the movie Radioland Murders from the 90s, that is... That's not as good as this. This is better than Radioland Murders, but very similar style. It also Clue, maybe it's just that kind of like rap. What am I trying to say? The way the characters talk to each other, and you know, it reminded me a little bit of Clue. Once again, I don't think it's as good as Clue, but it reminded me of that. If those are probably the better examples, if you're trying to think of something to compare it to, but I think it's still kind of its own thing. So.
Yeah. Also, like, I stumbled in the beginning of this movie because
You went
going
to the bathroom.
Into this,
you got stuck
going to the bathroom. Going to the bathroom all the time in these movies. I can't hold my bladder. No, what happened here was I was looking at this cast going in, and I like some of the screenshots because I hadn't seen a trailer for this before I went in. I was expecting a Wes Anderson movie because so many of the people
that's
in this movie are
comparison.
Wes Anderson-esque.
Sure.
And there was a lot of symmetry, you know, in the cinematography of this movie. But then whenever the people started talking and communicating with each other, it was very un-Wes Anderson-y.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's no dry, monotone, comedic timing here. No, these are loud, vibrant, eccentric characters. And I love that. So I just wanted to make sure I got that out there that, like, I did stumble in the beginning, but once I found the rhythm and what the movie was going to be, I really enjoyed the trip it took me on.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think the sense of humor is a real thing to pull out of this one. And I think there is a case to be made that if you can just be fun, then people will just enjoy, you know, experiencing whatever you put in front of them. And this movie is just fun. It's just fun. It's written well. The punchlines are great. There's a whole constable, inspector.
Love
constable.
That bit.
I did too.
It kills every time it slays, and it's so simple, and like it's just stuff like that throughout this movie.
It also kind of has like an Edgar Wright thing to it, like Hot Fuzz. It kind of reminded me of that a little bit too, just the dialogue and the way they rap with each other.
Tom George is somewhere in between Wes Anderson and
Was this his first movie? I know he did TV. I couldn't tell if.
I looked him up. I couldn't find like a big movie that I recognized or anything.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, I think you're going to have a good time. And if you like a good murder mystery, I think the murder mystery part of it's pretty good too.
I think it. I mean, it all makes sense. I mean, I will say like the. Well, no, I went back and forth with what I thought about the resolution, but it's fine. And that scene is so good. There's a bit with where tea's being served that results in probably one of the movie's funniest moments.
Yeah. Besides Saoirse Ronan, I'm gonna have to look up who actually portrayed Agatha Christie because
Shirley Henderson.
She slayed it. I love that so much. Setting the lazy Susan. Oh no, I think it killed me. It was so good.
Not just you. Sorry. Continue
and
on.
I think what Aaron was saying about the meta commentary, I think the meta commentary isn't this interesting because I think if you know anything about The Mousetrap, I think you're going to get more stuff that they're poking at, you know, that they're pointing out. But it's like you said, it's not over the top. But if you don't know any of that, you're still, I think, going to have a really good time with this movie. I mean, I think it still presents a really fun murder mystery, a lot of fun performances from likable actors. And so that's what I like about it. I don't like movies that you feel like if you don't know the source material, you're going to be screwed, you know, but I don't think that's this kind of movie. But it does play with all that in a really fun way if you are familiar with that. And I think some of it you'll pick up on anyways, especially like Aaron was talking about, like where the final sequence takes place and all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, it's so much fun.
And apparently you have to have the cast and crew stand in a room with a dead body for multiple hours just staring at it.
Apparently. By the way, there is a 1955 film called See How They Run as well. This is not a remake of that film. It is a completely different.
Yeah, and it's not. Movie. I mean, the film itself is like it's an original thing. Like it's just based around something that actually, like a play that actually existed.
Well, yeah, you know, Mousetrap, Three Blind Mice. See how they run.
Yeah.
See how they run. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But the mystery within the movie, that's not something that actually happened. I don't think. I can't imagine how. I think we would know about that, but.
Beware if it did actually happen.
Well, and it's interesting too how it does bring in the actual case that the Mousetrap was loosely based on, which is true as well, which is pretty fascinating. But the stuff that actually takes place in the movie is not based on any kind of fact. It's just.
Are you saying that the Agatha Christie story that this was actually taken from a real case?
Yeah, she said that was where she got the idea. I don't know how similar they are, but like that was where the idea came to her, but obviously like who she puts in as the murderer and stuff. I don't think that's based on the case. I think she just took the basics and then just created her own. Okay. Or on straight, which makes sense. I mean, a lot of people do stuff like that. Like, you'll see, you know, something and then create your own murder mystery or whatever.
Yeah. Do you guys have anything else? Any one last thing for See How They Run?
I highly recommend people go see this. This is a fun, fun movie.
I don't think it's really going to do that well, but maybe. I hope it does.
Are you talking about, like, financially or, like,
yeah, like, I don't know how well it's going to do at the box office. I feel like this is a movie that's probably going to catch on at some point. And, like, I feel like this is... Because, like, Clue, for instance, Clue was a bomb. And, you know, that movie has stayed in the zeitgeist, you know, since 1985, whereas, you know, movies that were actually hits in 1985 haven't. So it could be that.
This is one of those movies that fits into the category of when I go hang out with some of my college buddies on New Year's, like we do every year, I'm putting this one on because they will not have heard of it. They will not have seen it, and they're going to enjoy it. You know, like every year, there are just a few of those movies that just fly under the radar, and I get to be the hero and go, watch this amazing fun time. And they're like, I didn't even know this existed.
That is fun. So that's Aaron fun. Likes to. Aaron has an ego. If you guys didn't know this,
and, what he me? Likes it to be me.
He likes it to be massaged.
The guy with three weekly podcasts. What are you talking about?
He likes it to be massaged way too much, and he also looks a little bit like Bill Skarsgård. So, you know, we never really know. We never really know what's going on there.
Yeah, make sure that Aaron don't drink Aaron's the bottle tea. Of wine in front of you. Yes, don't accept any pre-dipped tea bags. Nothing like that. Yes, Doc Trancy. There is no post-credit scene in this.
That is true. That is true. All right. I guess I will say my one last thing. Actually, I'll save it more for spoilers, but I think it addresses, Andrew, your issue with the narration. I really, really liked how the movie used the narration at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really clever, and it even does a callback about halfway through to it that I thought was really clever as well. I would assume I have a pretty comparable.
I guess I'll talk about that in spoilers because I don't want to say that movie and then people are like, oh, I get it. So
yeah. All right. So let's move on. I guess before we hit the best ever challenge, I do want to first throw out a thank you to our amazing SIFPOP members. We love and appreciate you for supporting SIFPOP. Means the world. Keeps the website going. Keeps the show going. Big time appreciation for that. We right now are doing a members only pre-show every week where we go over the latest episode of Game of Thrones House of the Dragon. So we talked about episode 4 this week on the pre-show. If you're interested in that, just go check out the Patreon, patreon.com/siftpop, and that should give you all the information you need to know. So if you go to siftpop, patreon.com/siftpop, you can check that out. It starts at $3 a month, and you can look at the different categories there.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
All right, let's move into the best ever challenge. We're going to do best ever Sam Rockwell movies. These are the best movies that Sam Rockwell has been in. We will go from number 5 to number 1. If you have something higher than the person who says it, you can always
trump.
You can always trump it. So nice ventriloquism there, Andrew. You have to watch the video show to get that. Let's kick it off. Actually, I'll start us off with my number 5. I imagine it might get trumped. I have The Green Mile at number 5.
Oh my God, yes. Trump!
All right. Then I guess, Jonathan, go next.
I'm going to feel really bad when you guys start talking about Green Mile. one thing I found interesting
when Andrew starts talking about Green Mile, I had it at number 5.
He hasn't like really starred in that many movies. Like he's like a supporting character, at least in mm-hmm. the really good ones that I found. But my number 5 is Richard Jewell.
Oh, nice. I had it in my honorable mentions for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That came out in 2019. Clint Eastwood directed this, and it's about Richard Jewell, the guy who it's in Atlanta, right? And he
Atlanta Olympic.
Yeah, he
bombs.
Discovered a bomb. And then after that, became a suspect for the person who actually planted the bomb or setting it up to where he can make himself look like a hero, because he's a character. And at least in the movie, I don't know a ton about the actual story. I just know the basics. But in the movie, he's played by Paul Walter Hauser in the movie, who's awesome. Oh, he's so good. He really wants to be like a police officer. He doesn't want to just be a security guard. He really wants to be like a police officer, FBI agent, whatever, detective. And so he starts off kind of getting himself into trouble because he's like trying really hard to like help them with the investigation and stuff. And then Sam Rockwell comes in because he plays a lawyer that decides to take his case, Watson Bryant. And Rockwell's really good in this movie, though. I just feel like a lot of these movies, he's more of a supporting character than the lead. But he's really good in this, and I just think it's a really good movie. Clint Eastwood does a really good job directing it. I don't know why it didn't do any better. The only Oscar nomination I think it got was Kathy Bates got nominated. And she's good. I don't think I don't know why Paul Walter Hauser probably should have been nominated.
It was a very stacked year, but I totally agree with you that and he should have been nominated.
Yeah, and I do recall there was a lot of discussion about it. It wasn't the movie's fault, but there was just stuff going on in real life involving the way police officers were acting, and of things of that nature that maybe people didn't really want to go watch this, you know, just didn't want to have that mindset going, you know, bad police that are, you know, interrogating, like are ruining this guy's life that probably didn't do anything. But it's really good. John Hamm actually plays one of the, I can't remember if it's FBI, I guess he's FBI. I don't remember what the organization is, but John Hamm's really good in it. It's a really well done movie. It's just, it's a typical like fall star stacked, you know, dramatic film, and it was one of the better ones that year, so I definitely wanted to mention it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Andrew, absolutely. What did you have at number 5?
This is where I have 3 billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri.
That was on my honorable mentions.
Mm. Nice. This Aaron, is
I don't
not
think
a movie
you like
I
this
enjoyed.
Movie too much.
No,
yeah.
I didn't really enjoy it.
No.
Talk about it, though.
Well, all the sane people out there would tell you that this is a remarkable movie. No, I think that Frances McDormand, whenever she gets together with like the Coen brothers, she really has a way about herself. But somehow she brings that character that I've appreciated her in all those Coen brothers movies, and she's made it even better in this Martin McDonagh movie. And I think that she is amazing in it. Sam Rockwell, who I believe was nominated, or he may have won for... yes, he did.
He was
yes, he did.
Did he win?
He won. Him and Frances McDormand won. He got a Best Supporting Actor for this movie. I think it's a remarkable movie. I love Martin McDonagh, O Brother, or not O Brother, In Bruges is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Me too.
Yeah, he's great. So, yeah, if you haven't seen this movie, it does feel very Coen Brothers-esque, but it also feels a little bit like In Bruges. I think you'd like it if you like those guys.
Yeah, I liked it. I will say the Woody Harrelson's also really good in it. And
yes,
there's an arc his character has that ends in a really, really tragic way. And just having experienced some of that in my own personal life, that was really interesting to like watch that. I was just like, I don't know, that affected me a lot more. And I think that's partly why I really kind of got into this movie more. The Sam Rockwell character is really interesting, but I haven't seen it since the theater, but I did really like it. But I did feel like he kind of got let off the hook a little bit. I mean, he does like, I don't know, maybe he doesn't, but that was one, there was something about his character I just remember troubled me. I kind of had a hard time with the way he was written, but it's a really fascinating movie, though. I think it's definitely worth the watch, unless you're Aaron and you're wrong.
Yeah, wrong.
I have a tendency to be wrong. So let's move on to number fours. My number four is The Way, Way Back.
I haven't seen this.
Yeah, yeah. Neither.
I obviously high recommend for me. This is just one of those great movies. This much like See How They Run is one of those movies that was just under the radar. Not a lot of people saw it, and it's just great. It's a great watch. It's, you know, it's not a comedy as much as See How They Run are. It's more like drama, emotional, but it's also funny and interesting. And yeah, everybody in it is great. And yeah, I really don't have or want to say more than that. Check it out. It's called,
I definitely want to see
Way
it.
Back.
I think you're the one actually that got me interested in seeing. I think you've talked about it in the past, and I was like, oh, mm-hmm. I need to check that out.
Yeah, it's also interesting because people will have conversations about like great Steve Carell performances, and yeah. Oftentimes this one gets missed, and it's just because not as many people yeah. have seen the movie, but it really is one of his best. So,
oh, cool.
Yep. Yeah, it's Steve Carell, Sam Rockwell, Toni Collette. So lots of good people here. What is your number four, Jonathan? Yeah,
I assume I'm getting trumped or whatever we're saying here. my number four is Galaxy Quest.
Trump!
Yeah.
We'll I love it, though. I love all five of these movies, by the way. I love Galaxy Quest. There's just three I like a little better.
There you go. Andrew, what do you have at number three?
Four.
Or number four, sorry.
It's going to get trumped as well, so get your finger ready, Aaron. I'm going to go with the moon.
Trump.
Yeah. I knew it. This guy's been in so many good movies.
He really has.
He really has.
I'm looking at my honorable mentions list, and I'm like, any other day, these would have been like top three movies, the ones in my honorable mention. He's a good, good actor.
Yeah. All right, I guess that takes me to my number three. This is where I have The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
I haven't seen it, but I somehow missed that.
He's the brother of Casey Affleck.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Aaron, I'll trump it, but it wasn't on my list
initially.
You don't
even have it on your list.
How are you going to trump that? Is that allowed? I'm just going to trump everything.
No. I just let everybody know that this would have been my number two moving forward. Okay. So go ahead and talk about it.
No, you can talk about it first. I mean, I know you love
you
this
just,
movie.
You forgot about it?
Oh, I totally forgot about it. Yeah. It's the longest movie title in history. Yeah. Cinematography is stellar. I gotta love Brad Pitt. He's great. It's a interesting story, especially for Aaron and I, because we live in the area, like his old stomping grounds, pretty close. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a great story, great performances all around. And actually, Sam Rockwell gives a really good performance in this movie, now that I think of it. Yeah, good pick, Aaron. Thank you for reminding me. Now I want to watch that movie.
It's a great movie. It's just a great watch. If you've listened to much of the show, I'm not necessarily a Westerns kind of guy. But when it's a great story, I will shout it from the rooftops about great Westerns. When it's, you know, Assassination of Jesse James or 310 to Yuma or, you know, whatever the case may be, even with some of the older Westerns that I've seen recently that are really, really good. I really like this one. So great cast, great story.
Great director.
Really well told. Yeah, great director.
I love Dominic.
Yeah.
So Killing Them Softly does not have Sam Rockwell in it, but that is a movie that is way underseen. That movie is awesome. Make sure you watch the one with Brad Pitt, though, and not the one with Heather Graham. Those are two very different movies.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, I was. If you're
not saying I don't recommend the one with Heather Graham, but it's not the one I'm talking about.
No, but if you see the one with Heather Graham and you you want to see the one with Heather Graham and then you get the brutally violent other one with Brad Pitt, yeah, you're going to be a little shocked.
Yeah, it depends what you're in the mood for that night. You want some Joseph Fiennes, Heather Graham lovemaking? I would check that one out. That you're not going to get that in the Brad Pitt one. So
no, not at all. Your number three, Jonathan.
Frost Nixon.
Yeah, that's in my honorable mentions.
Yeah, this actually might be my favorite Ron Howard movie. I would have said Apollo 13 probably like 5 or 6 years ago, but this one just really got me. And I've watched it like a decent amount of times since, and I don't rewatch a lot of stuff anymore. But anytime it was like when I had like traditional cable and it would just be on like, you know, HBO or whatever, I would just watch the rest of it. Sam Rockwell doesn't have like he's definitely a supporting character in this, but we're just doing movies that he's in, right? So it doesn't really matter.
Yep.
And absolutely, he's good. Like, there's nothing wrong with him. The movie, for people that don't know, Ron Howard directed it. Michael Sheen is David Frost. Frank Langella is Richard Nixon. And this is based on a series of interviews after Watergate. And David Frost wasn't really taken seriously as a journalist. I guess, not that Graham Norton's not taken seriously, but he was kind of like a Graham Norton or something. Like he had more of like a celebrity type show or whatever.
I think he did game shows in Britain, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe that's right. Maybe I'm confusing him with somebody.
It's along those lines of like was a TV personality as opposed to like...
Yes, he was a TV personality. That's a good way to put it. I think you're right, though. I forgot about that part. But he just the idea that he would be the one to come and, you know, and then that's kind of what the movie's based around, is just the series of tapes that they made together. And it's just about him eventually kind of getting to the heart of it and, you know, and all that stuff. Sam Rockwell plays another journalist. James Reston Jr. And he had also written about the impeachment. He also wrote about the Jonestown murder, the real person. He was a pretty well-known journalist at the time. It's a really, really, it's just a character piece. I mean, for the most part, it's just mostly two people talking to each other. But Michael Sheen and Langella are so good. And Langella is doing it. I don't know. He does an interesting Nixon. It's not, I mean, the impression is kind of there, but I don't know. It's pretty good. I liked it. So it's a great movie. It's an underseen movie too. I don't really hear people talk about it. I think at the time it was nominated for some stuff, but it might've even been nominated for Best Picture, but I just don't hear anybody talk about it anymore. So
it's so good. So good.
It's amazing.
It's one of my favorites.
Kind of reminds me of Quiz Show. Like it kind of has that feel to it.
Sure.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, the reason why Dave Frost was the one doing this interview is because that's who the Nixon campaign was like saying, hey, this guy's British, so he doesn't care about American politics, and B, he's a TV personality, so he's simply going to, you know, ask some easy handed questions.
Yeah, softballs.
Just so he can get U.S. publicity. Mm-hmm. And how this movie turns that around, it is brilliant. Mm-hmm. As I was making this list, and this one popped up, I realized that I really need to see this movie again. Yeah, it definitely needs to bump up my rewatch list because it is so good.
It is
so
good. I'm
glad you guys like it so much.
Andrew, your number three?
This is where I have Galaxy Quest. Trump! It makes me happy that you trumped it. It really does. I'm glad that you trumped it.
All right, let's move on to our number twos then. This is where I have Moon.
That's where I have it too.
All right. Well, we will talk about it now then. Jonathan and I had Moon at number two. Andrew had Moon at number four?
Four.
So obviously we all love this movie. Talk about another beautiful little under the radar film. This is really, really good. The atmosphere in this one is so picture perfect. The tone is so picture perfect that you just like sink into this sci-fi world and what's going on. And then just the structure of what happens is just, it's just compelling. It's just straight up compelling filmmaking. And it grabbed me and didn't let go. So I really love Moon.
Oh yeah.
It's great. I think the one thing kind of disappointing about it is that Duncan Jones, like, because he did Source Code after this, which is also outstanding with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I really like, in my mind, like he should be like he should be on the same level as like Denis Villeneuve at this point. But
he did Warcraft.
He picked the wrong studio film, right? And Warcraft actually, it's kind of interesting. It's not good. I mean, it's not a good movie. But I don't think it's because of him. I don't think that movie was going to be good.
Mute is kind of terrible.
Yeah, and then Mute was not good at all. But I don't even. That was a Netflix thing. So I think Warcraft kind of screwed him up. He's got something now. He's supposed to be doing called Rogue Squadron. And I don't know what that is. And I don't even know if it's actually happening.
Do you mean
it's
Rogue just, Trooper?
Rogue Trooper. Sorry, Rogue Squadron. Yeah. That would be like a Star Wars thing, probably.
It sure would be. I think they actually just canceled Rogue Squadron.
Yeah, that's why I had that in my mind.
Well, yeah. I think they just canceled the Patty Jenkins
but,
one. Yeah.
But yeah, no, Moon is excellent. Know as little as you can going in, I think, is the best way to go about it. But it's that kind of that cerebral sci-fi kind of thing. I just don't know. This is the kind of sci-fi I like.
Yeah, because I didn't know it was going to be sci-fi whenever I watched it. Like I had near future and as opposed to sci-fi, but mm-hmm. the story twist that comes halfway through, I'm like, oh, I had no idea I was watching this kind of a movie, and I am here for it.
Can you imagine seeing the kind of year that Top Gun Maverick has had, making $800 million or whatever it's made, and then going, hey, you know that Star Wars property about fighter planes? Let's cancel that movie. Like, what?
By the way, I did want to say before we get away from this, Moon is like kind of, I think that might be the one we've all mentioned where he's the main character. I mean, he's really the only, he's one of the only characters. So. It shows that he can definitely lead a film. I hate that he hasn't gotten that opportunity more. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's had a great career. It's not like he has anything to complain about, but I wish we had more movies where he's at the front and center like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyways.
All right, Andrew, you're number two.
Aaron, you knew this movie was coming eventually and mm-hmm. you hate it and I love it. We're going to talk about Seven Psychopaths.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
I hate this movie. I just haven't watched it in a long time.
Well, do you like it better than Three Billboards?
Yes.
No, I'm talking to Aaron. Oh. I was just, because those are like, he apparently doesn't like either one of those Martin McDonagh movies. So do you like In Bruges?
I love In Bruges. In Bruges is one of my favorite movies. I'm not a huge fan of
Seven. At least you're not wrong about that. You're like, Westerns
suck. At least I'm right about one thing.
Yeah. Westerns are terrible. I hate these other two Martin McDonagh movies.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
I'm sorry, Andrew.
You get it.
Talk about this brilliant film.
You've seen it then, John?
Yeah, it was on my honorable mentions.
Okay. I love the Sam Rockwell character in this movie. He and Christopher Walken's the chemistry mm-hmm. between... Well, him, Christopher Walken, and Colin Farrell. That triad mm-hmm. right there are just so great. The way that Colin Farrell plays this straight man to a bumbling, adorable Christopher Walken and this crazier than all get Sam Rockwell. It sounds like three people that shouldn't work well together, but that chemistry is so good. And Woody Harrelson as this psychotic mob boss, it's so good. And then how Sam Rockwell is so convinced that everything is going to play out like in a movie, like we're going to have the shootout in the desert. And why your gun can't jam when we're having a shootout in the desert. Like he thinks he's in a movie pretty much. Mm-hmm. I absolutely adore this movie. Adore it.
It's so well written. And I like just how it has that kind of that back, it's essentially a movie about screenplay writing. Which is really fascinating to me, even though it's a standard, it's kind of like a heist thing or whatever, or criminal crime thing. I also think that, speaking of Colin Farrell, that is he's one of the most frustrating actors for me, but McDonagh gets him. Like, I don't know how he gets him to do the performances he does in those two films. I don't know if he's in the new one too, isn't he? I think Colin Farrell's
which
excites me almost more than the fact that it's McDonagh, because I know Farrell's going to do something really fascinating. But Miami Vice. And you're
it's
just
the
like
same in Bruges cast, right? It's Gleason too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Gleason's in it too. But you go watch something like Miami Vice, and you're just like, this guy is terrible. You go watch like in Bruges, and you're like, he's awesome.
Or
although
the
I do
Batman
kind of love
when
Miami
he becomes
Vice.
The Penguin. Apparently, I don't know. The guy I saw in the Batman didn't look like Colin Farrell. So,
oh, that's right. I thought he wasn't in the Batman. I thought we decided
no, he's
that.
Not.
Yeah, we decided it is the Penguin.
Yeah, we didn't see any.
He was very good.
Batman.
Yeah. But yeah, number two, Seven Psychopaths. Number one, Aaron, Galaxy Quest. Know what you...
Yeah. I've got Galaxy Quest at number one. Andrew, you had it at number three, is that right?
Yes.
I had four.
And you had it at number four, Jonathan. This movie is flat out great. It is so much fun, so quotable, such a perfect, loving spoof of Star Trek, too. You know, like Star Trek conventions and fans, and you can feel that there's care. Yeah, you can feel that there's care here for fandom. Speaking of Justin Long, right?
Yeah.
Justin Long pops up in Galaxy Quest.
I knew it.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I knew it. I knew it. I knew it.
Yeah, I absolutely love Galaxy Quest. What do you guys want to say about it?
There's a red thingy moving towards the green thingy. I think we're the green thingy.
I honestly think this is where I really became a Sam Rockwell fan.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I mean, he might actually be the best thing about this movie in some ways. Alan Rickman though is so good. But the Rockwells, who my wife and I quote constantly, like it's you know, the do I? You don't know.
As far as you know, I'm crewman number six. and the fact that his name is Guy, I mean, it's I mean, it's perfect. I mean, come on, what more could you want?
And he does the best like gun finger and wink or whatever that is towards the camera that I've ever seen. It is it is amazing.
Yeah.
Tony Shalhoub, also I should mention, is excellent in this
movie. Shalhoub. Oh yeah,
I like how he's like, I'm gonna put some WD-40 on that next time. It had a little
deadpan. Everything he does is so deadpan. Hey guys,
and he doesn't even breaking apart. Just FYI,
he doesn't think any of this is weird. Like I love when he's just standing there eating like the stick and the cheese. You know, it's just like. So amazing.
Oh, everybody freaks out when they get teleported to the ship and he's just like, that was a hell of a thing. And he just walks off like everything's fine.
Listen, I was ready to go on to Jonathan's number one, but if we want to keep talking about all the amazing parts of Galaxy Quest, we can certainly do
that
too.
That's what I'm saying. I love all these movies I'm mentioning. It just happened to be a little, you know, by just an inch, it just missed getting a little farther up for me.
What's your number one, Jonathan?
I don't know. I hope one of you have at least seen this. Mine is, I'm a huge David Mamet fan, and Heist is my number one. And this actually, I mean, I don't know, because there's so many Heist movies, and I think I changed my mind on what's my favorite, but this is, as far as like just entertaining, I think this is the most entertaining one. The dialogue in this, it's David Mamet.
Movies.
Huh?
There's three Heist movies. There's 2001, 2015.
It's 2001. Yeah, I should have mentioned that. It's 2001, directed by David Mamet, starring Gene Hackman. One of the last like great Hackman performances. He's the lead in this. He's have either one of you seen this?
It's on my list of shame. I have not seen this.
Gene Hackman plays a he's a criminal. He's working for this crime boss, played awesomely by Danny DeVito, and maybe the one of the last great Danny DeVito performances too, at least in film. I don't want to tick off. I don't want to tick off Philadelphia fans.
Have you seen Dumbo? The live action Dumbo?
I forgot about Dumbo. Damn. and Hackman, it's a pretty generic kind of thing where Hackman doesn't want to do it anymore. He just wants to. He's got enough money. He's good to go.
Right.
He wants to go live on his boat with his girlfriend, played by David Mamet's wife, Rebecca Pigeon, who's a pretty common Mamet star in this era. She was in State and Maine and. The Spanish Prisoner and stuff like that. But anyways, and so DeVito gets him to do, you know, one last job. And Sam Rockwell is Danny DeVito's nephew. And so that's how he gets into the picture. He's really funny in it. He's really good. Delroy Lindo's in this movie.
Love that guy.
Yeah, the late Ricky Jay is in this movie.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah, Patti LuPone is in it. But it's just, it's everything you expect out of a Mamet thing. It's the last, I don't know how many he's directed after this. It's definitely the last film of his he directed where I just love it. I mean, he did Red Belt, and there might be another one in between there. I can't remember. But if you like heist movies, this used to be really hard to find, which I think is why it wasn't really, a lot of people weren't talking about it. I believe now they actually may have a Blu-ray, and I think it does actually stream occasionally. So, but it was hard to find there for a while. That was probably why a lot of people haven't seen it. But if you haven't a chance to watch it, I cannot recommend it enough. It is so good. I mean, it's like Heat levels of good. It's very different than
Heat.
Yeah, but it's
praise.
For me, it's more entertaining than Heat. Heat is probably the better movie, but this is just, you know, I don't know. If if you're a David Mamet fan, I don't know how you can miss it, but how you can't watch it. But if you love crispy dialogue and, you know, all that kind of stuff, it's a great film. And
sounds
twist
like it's
and
right
turns.
Up my alley.
Huh?
Sounds like it's right up my alley. I've definitely
This is an Aaron movie. Yeah.
Elevated absolutely. It up my list. It is streaming on Hulu right now. So
okay, cool. Yeah.
I'll probably watch it tonight.
Yeah, fire it up. Great call. Andrew, what's your number one?
The happiest movie ever made, The Green Mile.
Smiles, unicorns, rainbows. Yes.
No, this is unarguably the saddest movie ever made. Like, it's so depressing.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell me Schindler's List or Hachi or any of these movies about a boy. I'm trying to think. No, The Green Mile is the most just ball your eyes out movie I've ever seen.
Someone needs to watch Old Yeller again.
Oh, please. This movie is Old Yeller for breakfast. Michael Clark Duncan gives an outstanding career-defining performance. Yes. An actor that I love every single time I see him in, yet I don't think he's ever had like the lead role in this. David Morse. I love this guy.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah. He was all over. He was in a lot of movies around this time, but you're right. Mm-hmm. He never really had a lead role.
Yeah. And then who I think is one of the most despisable characters of all time is Percy Wetmore, played by Doug Hutchison, who, mm-hmm. if you do any info biographical stuff on Doug Hutchison, not the best guy.
I probably just wouldn't do that. I'd probably just not. Don't Google Doug Hutchison. That's probably
Maybe I shouldn't say I've met him.
Have you?
At an X-Files convention.
Was his girlfriend with him at the time?
I don't remember.
He married a 15-year-old when he was 50.
And the 15-year-old parents signed off on it. Like all that.
Yeah, that's the only way. That's the only way that
crazy.
They. Would.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Wasn't he the... Wait, you said X-Files convention.
He was
wasn't he the guy that like could squeeze
Tombs.
Into
yeah.
any... Yeah.
Yeah.
That was actually a really good episode.
Yeah.
It really was. That's the one where Mulder's like, what's the quickest way I can get this off of my hand without betraying my calm exterior, my cool exterior or whatever?
Yeah. Doug Hutchison is actually quite good at playing super creepy people, and I guess we know why. But,
yeah.
I mean, he around that era, like, he was the bad guy in this Jamie Foxx movie called Bait.
Yes!
Yeah. So he's not a bad actor by any means, but...
I hadn't mentioned this, but it's probably my favorite Stephen King movie adaptation.
Cool.
And whenever Stephen King and Frank Darabont team up, magic happens. I think of this, The Mist. Oh, The Mist.
Shawshank.
Shawshank, yeah. I was like, is Sam Rockwell in The Mist? But he's not.
No.
So, but
he's
yeah.
in that car at the end.
He's in the very.
That's his only part.
Yeah. No, he was the army guy who walked up to Thomas Jane. You good, bro? Not really.
Yeah.
But yeah, Green Mile. One of the greatest movies ever made.
I need to rewatch this. I don't think I've seen it since the theater, and I liked it. I remember liking it. It's just, you know, it's a long movie, and just for whatever reason, I've never popped it back on. But I definitely need to give it another watch because it's been too long. I remember liking it. I remember Stephen King at the time said Frank Darabont is going to specifically only direct Stephen King adaptations that take place in a prison. This was before The Mist. I just remember Stephen King had that quote. It was really funny.
Well, it's its own kind of prison, The Mist.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
And even The Majestic, it's a Jim Carrey prison. So
that's true. Yep. I think for me, honorable mentions, there's three more that we have to mention.
Okay.
At least as far as I'm concerned. we certainly have to mention the other one he was nominated for an Oscar, which is Vice.
Yeah.
He got a nomination for that. And I really like Vice. So it was on my honorable mentions. Jojo Rabbit certainly deserves a mention.
That was the other one we had mentioned.
That's one I weirdly haven't. I haven't watched that yet. So.
Oh, interesting.
It. Yeah, it's just the subject matter. I don't know. Sure. It's just something about it. I've just never really wanted to be in that headspace. But I need to check it out because I like Watiti. And...
there are heavy moments to this movie. Don't get me wrong, but there is so much innocence about it that does make it very not welcoming, but it's easy to, you know, you don't feel icky. Afterwards.
If anyone's going to make that work, it's probably Watiti. So,
do you remember Beautiful Life? The Beautiful Life.
I haven't seen it.
Life.
Wait a minute.
It's some kind
familiar.
Of feel. And then the other one. And,
oh, Life is Beautiful. You're saying
Life is Beautiful.
Yeah,
thank
I
you.
Have seen that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other, only other one I want to mention, maybe this is just a me thing, but I'm actually a pretty big fan of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I am too.
That he's in. I really enjoy that movie. So, so that is on my honorable mentions. What else? Did you guys have any other?
I already mentioned I had Three Billboards and Seven Psychopaths. The other one I did want to mention, but it's not a good movie at all, but it's a great Sam Rockwell performance, and that's the first Charlie's Angels.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
He's so good in it. He ends up being one of the bad guys, but there's this scene with him and a cigarette and he's dancing to this terrible song and it's hilarious. Like, I don't even know. It feels like it's a completely different movie and while you're watching, like, I want to be in that movie instead of the one over here that I'm watching, cuz that is by no means a good movie. But but he's so good in it. I just wanted to mention it.
Andrew, did you have any other ones you wanted to mention?
I'm looking right here and I can't see any that is like really jumping out at me. Oh, Iron Man 2, I guess, is worth mentioning.
Sure, sure.
It's a thing that I'm sure you've seen. Have either of you seen Choke?
No, I've read the book.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I haven't seen
the
movie. I did read the book, though.
That's what I was, because it's Chuck Palahniuk. I can never say his name.
The guy who wrote Fight. I don't know how to say his name either. But the guy who wrote Fight Club. Yeah. And that's also Rockwell's the lead in that, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. It's him and God.
There's a scene in the book that involves anal beads, and I was thinking, I don't know that I want to watch that. Like, I don't know that I want that visual.
Fair.
So
fair.
And I know it's in the movie because I was told. So I was like,
Fair enough.
I don't remember that, and I have no desire to jog my memory. So.
Let's move on to buried treasure, shall we? unfortunate time to move on to a category called buried treasure, but we are going to do it anyway. So what do you guys got? What's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? Jonathan, you're our guest, so you will go last.
So my wife had actually watched it while it was on this past season, but I had not checked out. So in the last couple weeks, I have gone through the first season of Abbott Elementary.
Oh, nice. Is this your buried treasure?
Huh?
Is this your buried treasure?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just telling you would go last, but you're going first.
Oh, I thought
great.
You said go ahead and go. I am so sorry.
No.
Do you
want to
edit me out then?
No. Go ahead. Tell us about Abbott Elementary, because I love this show.
I'm so sorry.
So,
I love it. And it's interesting because we just don't really talk about, like, you know, network shows don't really get talked about that much. But this made an appearance. This was nominated for some Emmys, and Cheryl Lee Ralph won, I think, Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy. She's one of the teachers in this. And then Quinta Brunson, who's the star of the show and is also the creator, she won, I think, a writing Emmy. And I'm so happy because, you know, the Emmys don't really, I mean, network shows don't get Emmy nominations anymore. And I think Modern Family, I think they said, was the last sitcom maybe that did, or maybe The Good Life is one of those. This show is really funny. And if you want to watch it, it's on Hulu and HBO Max. The first season is. It's only like 13 episodes. You can watch it like in a couple of days. And it's just all about this public school. I can't remember where they are.
Abbott.
Oh, it's Abbott, that's the name of the town?
I would imagine
Their rival school is Costello Elementary.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's just about this group of teachers at this public school. And it's just, it's really funny. The entire cast is great. My favorite might be the principal, who's played by this Janelle James, who I had never seen in anything before this. She's hilarious. I hope she gets some Emmy recognition at some point. The guy who played young Chris Rock in what was that sitcom called? Like Everything About Chris or whatever.
Yeah.
He was also in Walking Dead. Tyler James Williams is his name. He's in this. Lisa Ann Walter's in this, so you might have seen. Like, she's a stand-up comic, and but it's a really great cast. It's a really funny show. Super wholesome. So if that turns you off, don't want to check this out. But no, I'm kidding. But no, it really is. It's like a family-oriented show, but it still has some bite to it. And it's not like your standard network sitcom. Like, I think it's got a little bit of originality to it that, at least with the cast, maybe just the cast makes it work. But I don't know. It's really nice to see a network show that's actually worth watching. So
Tyler in the live chat says Abbott Elementary takes place in Philly. I think
Philly. That's right. That's right.
I believe that is correct.
In the
also
suburb
love this
of Abbott.
There is a it's towards the end of the season. It's like maybe the second or third to last episode where they decide to start a gifted program. It might be the 30s, like the funniest 30 minutes I've seen in like a little while. It's a really good show.
It is. It's really good. It's really funny.
I wanted to talk about it so much, I went out of turn. So
that's right. I loved it so much, I butted in line. I'll go next because my treasure is not buried at all, really. I'm going to talk about Rings of Power because I don't think we've really talked about it on this show very much. It is on Prime. This is the $460 million season of television that Amazon has done. I just read recently that they have signed contracts for a five-year $1 billion in investment, at least. So, and I'm glad because I am absolutely loving this show. It is probably my favorite thing currently on television. It completely recaptures those emotions and the magic I had with Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings, and just how the fandom I had for those movies. I'm really loving how they are introducing both characters we know, because elves live a long time, and also so many new characters that are past the past of, you know,
some
of the characters.
So are there actors? Are there some of the same actors or no?
It's not connected to Peter Jackson's.
Oh, I thought you just said so. You're saying some of the characters from the books.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I
correct.
Got you now.
That are Sorry. Also in the movies that were based on the books.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, correct. Not. I don't think there's any of the same actors at all.
No.
But I don't know why being coy. Elrond's here. Galadriel's here.
What?
There are a couple other names I could drop that I probably won't, just because they would be a little bit spoilery. But I am absolutely loving it. I'm falling in love with all of these characters. There are things about it that it does that I didn't realize I was missing from my fantasy television in Game of Thrones. That I was just like, oh, this feels so nice. Like, this show doesn't want to hurt me. Like, this show wants me to feel good.
There's no incest. What's going on? I thought that was a fantasy staple. It was all the incest.
So there's that, and then there's, you know, it's expansive. And aside from that, even just foundationally, it almost wouldn't matter because it looks so beautiful. I've never seen anything like it on television. Every frame of painting, as they say. So
I just remember the first thing you said about it in our Slack was, this looks amazing. I was like, well, God, I hope so, because they spent enough money.
Right.
That would be terrible. Like, that would be the worst thing that could possibly happen to it. I mean, if it had like a bad story or something, that'd be one thing. But if it looked bad, you'd be like, holy crap. Like,
yeah, no, the money's on the screen. It really is. You can see it. And you know it's on the screen because it's not like they're paying, you know, tons of money for these actors. Most of them, you know, are fairly early in their career, haven't done a ton of other stuff. They're putting the money into the visuals, and the every prop you see on screen looks so detailed and perfectly worn and perfect in its environment. And
nice.
it's really incredible production work.
I've got to get to it.
It's so good. So good.
Busy.
Andrew, why don't you finish this off?
All right, just real quick, Sam Rockwell, honorable mention, the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles back in 1990.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's right. I'm so sorry. I'm
he's
so
like
very
thug
sorry
one
it took us
something.
This long to say it.
He is yes. Thug. No, he's Head Thug, not
Head
Thug.
No, I saw it on IMDb. I couldn't remember what it said, something like that. I knew. That's fine.
I actually remember seeing him in the movie. Like, I know he has one line. He goes, go to this warehouse, you'll get your answers. And he's talking to the cops at the very end.
I rewatched it like a couple years ago, and I was like, is that Sam Rockwell?
This isn't a buried treasure because it's very popular, but I am in the minority I have found with this, and I just want to know what you all have been smoking, because She-Hulk is phenomenal. I'm not even joking, She-Hulk might be one of my favorite Marvel shows. Like, out
it's
of
a TV
all of them,
show
the,
huh it's like an actual TV show.
Yeah,
which
that's
is
what
kind
I
kind of a nice
like
change
about
of pace.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Tatiana is stellar primo. I love her. She is absolutely adorable and perfect. I love everything that the show tackles, because the breaking of the fourth wall, you have all these extremely ridiculous characters like Titania, and then all the guys that she goes on dates with. It's a very interesting look into, you know, kind of like with Barbarian, but definitely not tonally the same, how, you know, women can feel vulnerable and, like preyed upon. And even though she has all these powers and strengths, that feeling doesn't go away. And I think that's supposed to be, you know, the main takeaway from this show. I'm loving all the Easter eggs. This show is beyond hilarious. I think it's one of the funniest shows on right now. And I'm not joking when I say that it's creeping up to one of my favorites.
Are there a lot of people complaining about it? I haven't really
read
much.
A lot of people hate the show, apparently.
I've only seen the first two episodes.
That hasn't been my experience.
Really?
My experience, what I have seen and heard, at least from the people I listen to or see on Twitter mostly, people are digging it.
That's because you only follow people that agree with you. So
I do know that there was a lot of complaint about the CG early on, and that's understandable.
I'm looking at IMDb, really, and it has a 5 out of 10.
Oh, geez.
Oh, so it's getting review bombed.
Yeah. That tends to happen when it's like something that's female centric, which is really sad. But I still haven't watched past the second episode just because I haven't had time. I really liked it. And plus, it's only like 30 minutes, which is that's a huge plus for any show.
Yeah,
is it just kind of like a weekly thing? It's like she's just like getting assigned cases and stuff. I mean, is that kind of what's going on? That's cool. I like that.
Not this past week, but the week before. It's an episode with Wong and this club girl, and I want a show just with these two with those two. I was having so much fun with them. I was dying. I was laughing so hard.
And you just mentioned Titania, and I just realized I said Good Life earlier, and I meant Good Place, but that's a Jamil, or is that her name?
Yeah.
Is she a villain?
Jamila, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's Titania.
Oh,
yeah,
that is a villain. Okay.
Yeah,
that's, I don't know that's a lot of like Hulk stuff. So
She-Hulk's main nemesis, I think.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
She-Hulk. If it's a very meta comic book, like
I've read it
in the show is just like how the comics are.
Yeah, I remember reading a few issues here and there when I was younger. I just don't remember much about them. But yeah, I do remember it was very comic centric. Like it was more comedy than you know a lot of superhero comics were at the time.
Yeah, it's
which is cool.
Stellar. Yeah, so if you watched it early and you weren't sure about it, I'd say give it another chance because I love this show so much.
It's also a little more adult than most of these shows have been too. Like the
it's sexual.
Yeah, there's some like real adult life stuff in there. Megan Thee Stallion shows up in a very hilarious way. I really like the show. I think it's doing some good things. There's an episode, I don't think it's too spoilery to say this, but I'll just say it revolves around a date that goes really, really well, and then something happens at the end of the date and it just crushed me.
I was about to cry. It broke my heart,
and I was not expecting that from this show. And it's just like, I think it just does some things really well. And part of that's Tatiana. I think she's great. I think she's an incredible actor.
She's awesome. Did you guys watch Orphan Black?
Yes.
Yep. I really need
every episode, every season.
I need to see it. Everybody
says
it
was good, especially like the last like couple seasons weren't as good, right? I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
The last couple seasons of Orphan Black were not that great.
I think the first three seasons were
amazing. Yeah. And Tatiana was amazing throughout.
That's what I hear. Go ahead. Sorry.
No. I was just saying, I just think they ran out of runway trying to figure out how to, you know, land the plane. So,
Yeah. Because I've heard that she gives what a lot of people consider like the best TV performance of all time, because she plays multiple versions of a character, right?
Okay. And that's putting it lightly. I mean,
that show is
dozens
all her
of characters.
If she doesn't work, that show doesn't work. I mean, it's all on her shoulders.
But
she's incredible in that.
This show is adorable. Yeah, it's heartwarming. It can be very sad and depressing. Like Aaron and I said that, like the scene you're talking about, it killed me.
And yet it's so real. Good. And it does exactly what it's meant to do. So yes, a show about a giant green hulking lawyer woman is very authentic and real.
Oh, and Ginger Gonzaga, who plays Nikki Ramos, her friend, I love her. I love her to death.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That is She-Hulk on Disney Plus. Rings of Power is on Amazon Prime, and Abbott Elementary is on Hulu and HBO Max. Well, we did it, guys. We managed to do a podcast. We reflected the light down the passageway and saw the podcasting.
That's how light works.
That is how light works. Thanks so much for joining us today on Sif Pop. It's part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Oh, thank you, buddy.
Big thank you to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you to Jonathan Watkins for showing up today.
Thanks for having me.
Talking about movies. Jonathan, where do you want to send people on the internet?
I mean, I'm not on Twitter as much as I used to be, but I am on there. It's at SamLoomis13. And then I'm also on Letterboxd. I think you just look up my name. I need to actually do this one time because I feel like I say this every time. But my Letterboxd link is on my Twitter information. So
there you go.
But those are really, I don't really do anything else social media wise. And then just, you know, watch CinemaSins, TVSins, CommercialSins every week if you can. And yeah. Yep.
I haven't heard of it.
Yeah.
Not what a lot of people know this about. You speak of? Also, thank you to our Sif Pop members at patreon.com/sifpop. Appreciate you guys. If you want to check out all the goodness over there, that is patreon.com/sifpop. Support starts at $3 a month. And just for those few dollars, you can know that you're keeping this podcast going. And thank you for doing so. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a rating or a review or a comment at Apple Podcasts or at Spotify or wherever you listen. You can even email us, feedback@siftpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than happily living on a diet that consists solely of warm milk. We will be back next week with Fantastic Fest coverage. We will see you then.
Bye.
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 You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.